Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hey, what's going on, Jason? How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Delighted to be with you.
Yeah, it's been a fun little playoff run here. It's over. It's kind of felt like we knew it was going to be over, but you know, like you knew it was kind of done. You know, I had some people at work. They were like, "Hey, you think the Nuggets are ending it today?" And I'm like, "Yeah, probably." And then watching the game, it was like, "Yeah, the Nuggets are definitely winning this game." And then there was that brief moment of the Heat, you know, and Jimmy Butler being like, "Oh crap, if I don't do something now, we're going to lose and have to go home." So did a little bit there, but it did ultimately feel like kind of a fait accompli. But I think that more speaks to just how great the Nuggets were and how great Jokic is, as we're going to discuss in this episode. But a fun playoff run and fun playoff season, I think, overall for the NBA.
Yeah, I went to bed when woke up the next day with just kind of a feeling of joy. And I think that was me. Yeah, I was happy for the Nuggets for winning, and I like the Nuggets. They're not my favorite team, obviously, but I do like them and was happy for them. But just the joy that you could see exuding from them, from Michael Malone, from Jamal Murray, even from Jokic, who was kind of like low key about it, but you could tell, he was
putting it lightly, low key, right? Very low key.
Yeah, he was very low key, but you could tell, you could tell that it meant a lot to him. And you could just kind of see, the part of him didn't want to be there, but part of him, like, just, was really happy for that, and the joy of that team. And guys like Jeff Green, I forgot Ish Smith was even on the team.
Oh, you know what, in my little notes I have a little secondary notes thing. It was mentioned. Ish Smith, because I knew Jeff Green and I knew DeAndre Jordan. Then I saw a graphic today that was like Ish Smith, and I was like, oh man, Ish Smith,
right?
Who knew Ish Smith was on the Nuggets? Did you? Ish Smith always on the Nuggets?
13 teams, right? Yeah. He's played for 13 teams, and Jeff Green played for 12 teams. They've had the record, both of them winning their first title after being on so many teams. And like a guy like Reggie Jackson too, guys obviously weren't heralded, didn't play all that much, but had played for other good teams and had been around the league. DeAndre Jordan, as you mentioned too, so really cool for those guys, and obviously really cool for their main guys all, who kind of like the whole like, oh, you doubted us type thing gets old, but like there were a lot of guys who, Aaron Gordon, was just, the way he was seen in Orlando and the way he's evolved as a great player. And Jokic, of course, being a guy who, just has gotten a lot of disrespect. I mean, he's fantastic and he's fun and he's wonderful. And it's not like some epidemic of disrespect, but I just think there's a certain mindset of a guy who looks like him and plays like him and doesn't play above the rim and doesn't play in like the Jordan, Kobe, LeBron style of, dominating the ball and doing so much in their way. His effectiveness obviously comes in a very different way, but, obviously he demonstrated greatness throughout this playoffs. And, I started looking it up as it was, kind of becoming pretty evident that Denver was likely to win, and knew it he'd had a great playoffs, but just in terms of how great it was historically, I was pretty surprised by, where this, potentially ranks among the best playoff seasons of all time.
Oh yeah, for sure. And it probably speaks to, like you said, his entire career and particularly the last couple of years, where you see this guy that, I mean, honestly looks like a dude you would meet at like the YMCA or whatever, doesn't have the 7 foot tall thing. If that guy walked in, he'd immediately be the best player because he's 7 foot tall. But in NBA speak, he doesn't look that way because it's just like everybody's huge, everybody's tall, and yeah, he's a little taller than some other guys, but he goes out there on the court and he does not, if you took somebody that had never watched the NBA and laid out everybody on the floor, all the starters to the Heat and the Nuggets, there's no way that anybody would point out Nikola Jokic and they're like, that's definitely the best player on the court. Like, that's definitely the best guy. Like, nobody would think that just because he kind of, I don't know, he kind of looks like a goofy looking guy. And then if you saw him like dribble or like take a shot around the paint, you'd be like, well, that guy's definitely not good. And it's like, no, in fact, he's one of the best players ever. You know, he's like one of the best passers ever. If not even a big, I mean, we can almost not even, we don't even need to qualify anymore. It's like one of the best passers ever. And the best passing big man, we talked about that a couple weeks ago. I mean, it's not even in a category anymore. Like one of the best passers ever.
Right. Other than Magic Johnson, I'm not sure there's been I've ever seen a better passer ever.
Yeah. Right, just understanding the game, understanding who's open, when they're going to be open, how they can get open, making them open via his passes, like stuff like that is just it's next level stuff. But yeah, you watch him and you're just never quite sure how he's doing it, but he's doing it, and you're like, well, shit, he's doing it. And I guess that's kind of how this playoff, you know, when it was over, and you gave me this idea, and it was even before the final game, and you said, hey. I don't know if you know, but like Jokic is having one of the best playoff seasons ever. And I'm like, all right. Yeah, he's probably, I know he's doing good, but then looking at the numbers and running it as we're going to do here and discuss it, it's like, holy crap, this guy's having one of the best playoffs ever. And again, I don't know if enough people know about it. I don't know if enough people really fully contextualize just how good he has been. And that's what we're going to hopefully try to do here in this episode, is give you an idea of just how great he was during this playoff run. And of course, this NBA Finals run and culminating, you know, in the Finals MVP and in an NBA championship as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, you know, leads the Denver Nuggets their first title in franchise history, wins the Bill Russell Award for the NBA Finals MVP. And yeah, I mean, you just look at this. I mean, first of all, he had 600 points, 216 rebounds, 190 assists in the playoffs. For the very first time, he was the first player to lead in NBA history to lead the playoffs in all three categories, which is pretty impressive. We're going to get into the you know, how close he came to a triple double as well, but that stands out right there.
Oh, yeah, that's just nuts. Yeah, it's 600 points, 269 rebounds, 190 assists. So he ranks first in all three categories among all the players. And yeah, that's just it's pretty wild. It makes, obviously, like, he played the most games. He was in the final. But still, to be number one in all of those things and not have, you know, anybody else even a teammate get more assists, not even a teammate get more rebounds, that not even like, yeah, okay, he's the best player, so points. Yeah. Okay, that's, you know, that's not surprising, but he had the most rebounds and the most assists and the most points. It's just like, it's nuts. It's crazy.
Yeah. And he's not like, you know, again, he's obviously an excellent scorer, but that's not necessarily his first thing he always does. There were 10 other, you know, 10, 12 other guys who played in as many games as he did on his team and on the Heat. So, you know, any of them had a chance to have more assists or more rebounds. I mean, you know, played against Jimmy Butler, who's, you know, a great scorer, you know, who you might think would be at the top of this or near the top of this, but yeah.
Even his own teammate, Jamal Murray. Even Jamal Murray had more points or more assists or something. It's like that. Not even him.
Put out a bit of shock. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's just like, no, he had everything. Yeah. The best. He's the best at everything. Also, quick note here, second round picks to finals MVPs. We had touched on this about a month or so ago when we did our episode on Willis Reed. Of course, he was a second round pick, but we qualified it at the time too, that like second round pick in, you know, the late 60s, it doesn't mean maybe as much as it did for Nikola Jokic, in the sense that the second round was like, you know what, 12 picks in or whatever. So it's not quite the diamond in the rough that like a second round pick is in today's era, but a second round pick is a second round pick. It's still, a bunch of people had a chance to draft Willis Reed and they didn't, including the Knicks themselves. And then, you know, they got him. So it still counts. So he of course has two finals MVPs, 1970, 1973. So Willis Reed, and Dennis Johnson as well. His a little bit more, you know, in an era where a second round pick was a little bit more of a diamond in the rough, winning finals MVP in 1979. With the Supersonics. And then nobody else until now, Nikola Jokic here in 2023.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked a little bit before about triple-doubles, but yeah, he had 10 triple-doubles during the two-month playoff run, broke a 56-year-old playoff record. Want to guess who had the record?
All right, let's see. 56 years ago, good at everything, crazy numbers. I'm going to go with, I can't think of it. Jason, tell me, who is it? Who could this possibly be?
There's always a Wilt stat, Rich. There's always a Wilt stat. Wilt Chamberlain, seven triple doubles during the of course, the 1970 Sixers, 1967 playoff run. Of course, one of the great teams of all time. And then you know, game three of this series, he had the very first 30-point, 20-rebound, and 10-assist game in NBA Finals history. In fact, that's pretty rare, even if you look in just the regular season or other playoffs. It's only happened 46 times in history. Oh, yeah, you're never going to guess who.
Oscar Robertson.
Who is the most of those games in NBA history?
Oscar Robertson. Games? No, wait, 30 points, 20 rebounds, 10 assists. I don't know. You're going to have to give
Russell Westbrook? Yeah, no, it's it's Will Chamberlain. So,
Wilt.
Jokic, he's not that far behind, but he's at six in his career. Although he's, you know, he's only like in the first half.
He's young. It's going to take a while to get to 17, but he's still young.
And by the way, who else has done it? David Lee also has one. He got in 2010 versus playing for the Knicks against the Warriors. So, you know, obviously you think the legend of the game, you think Will Chamberlain, you think Nikola Jokic, and then you think David Lee.
And then you think of David Lee. Well, yeah, which I'm assuming that game like single-handedly got David Lee the Warriors contract. They were like, this guy's great. I don't need to watch any other games. I know this guy rules. Sign him right now, guys. I can tell you the guy's great. He just casually put up 30, 20, and 10 against us. We got to sign him. So, David Lee also did. A few other guys. It was like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It was mostly, the rest of the list was mostly guys that you would assume, and then also David Lee.
That should have been the name of our podcast, Also David Lee. And Also David Lee.
There's always one stat and Also David Lee.
Speaking of triple-doubles, Jokic and Murray in game three of the finals, first teammates ever to have 30-point triple doubles in the same game ever. This is playoff regular season ever. That is the first time that ever happened in any context. Also, the first teams to have 30 and 10 in the same playoff game since Clyde Drexler and Terry Porter in 1992.
There you go. So, it's just wild stuff.
Yeah. So, looking at you know, in the finals, Jokic had 30.2 points per game on 58% field goal percentage, 42% from three, 14 rebounds and 7.2 assists per game.
In addition to all the other stuff. Right. Oh yeah, I hit threes at a 42% clip too.
Then, you know, those are just obviously absurd numbers. If you look for the playoffs, you know, in total, he averaged 30 points per game, 13.5 rebounds, 9.5 assists. So very close to triple-double. The only other players to average 30-plus, 13-plus, and 9-plus in a playoff run. Yeah, Jokic, who else we got?
Russell Westbrook, 2017. And Oscar Robertson in 1963. So very, very rare class there. Obviously, one big thing you look at is you look at Oscar Robertson and Russell Westbrook. Jokic is 7 feet tall. Those other men are shorter than that by a lot. So that's a stat that makes sense for, a Russell Westbrook or Oscar Robertson, guys that are synonymous with, you know, all-around game, triple-doubles, you know, being able to fly up and down the court, that sort of stuff. And then also, the seven-foot guy who can barely run without, you know, tripping over himself also is there too, which just speaks to how, you know, ridiculous his game is. And it should be noted, too, that Jokic did this over 20 games as well. Westbrook did that over 5 games. So it's like, he was having these crazy numbers. It wasn't really influencing winning, and his team was gone. And that was, you know, 2017 was the first post, you know, Durant year. That was when Westbrook, you know, won the MVP, was just kind of doing everything because there was nobody else. And he was like, sure, I'll just do everything. This is fine. I like this. This is great. And Robertson, he did it over 12 games, which is very impressive as well. And obviously, given the way that the playoff format was, you know, doing it over 12, it's not like he had a chance to really have that many more games to do it in. But the fact that Jokic still maintained those numbers over 20 games, I think is just, it's even that much more impressive.
Right. So if you look at players with at least 27, 7, and 7, that's a lot of sevens, but 27 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists per game in the playoffs. This is minimum 300 minutes. So we're cutting off you people who are extremely short series. So about 8-9 games minimum. Nikola Jokic is on this list. John Morant was on this list for last year. LeBron James is on this list 6-7 times, actually. Michael Jordan's on this list for 1989, Larry Bird, 1987, George McGinnis, 1975, and then Oscar Robertson on this list twice. So that is very select company. If you look at players who just purely had a average triple-double in the playoffs, no matter number of minutes, obviously Jokic came very close. Jason Kidd did it in 12 games in 2007. Russell Westbrook did it twice, both in five games, and Oscar Robertson did it once in four games. So again, way more games than anybody else did, you know, to get into this, to get near this category. And, you know, Kidd, 14.6 points, 10.9 rebounds, 10.9 assists, you know, good, certainly a good playoffs, but nowhere near what Jokic is producing overall.
No. Yeah. And then, yeah, even the minutes played too is pretty stark too, because Jokic is right in 789 minutes played. You know, Kidd only doing 12 games is 484, but just to kind of give you an idea of just how big of a difference. And then those Westbrook ones, he's doing those in like less than 200 minutes, 194 and 186 minutes, you know, played. So yeah, Jokic doing, you know, maintaining that level of production over that many games, that many minutes, that many grueling series, all that sort of stuff is just, yeah, it's just, again, another testament to just how absolutely incredible this playoff run was for him.
Sure. So, if you look at the other, some of the best playoff seasons ever, and Jokic, he is one of three players with an NBA playoff season that ranks in the top 12 all time in the following category. So there's win shares per 48. He is at 0.305, that's 12th all time in win shares per 48. And total win shares in the playoffs, so this is obviously impacted. If you play more games, you have a chance to get more win shares. He has five win shares. He's sixth all time in that. In PER, 31.2, he's 11th in that. Value over replacement, he has three, which is tied for fourth all time. The more games you play in the playoffs, the higher that's going to go. And then box score plus minus at 12.8. He is sixth all time. So only Jokic and two other players have ever been in the top 12 all time in all five of those categories. The other one is LeBron James, who did it in the 2009 playoffs, 14 games. A playoff run we should talk more about. I guess, in fact,
we're
going
to.
And Michael Jordan, the 1991 playoffs in 17 games. So would you like to talk about Michael Jordan?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about the Michael Jordan one, because this is one that probably, if we're going to pose the question of, did Nikola Jokic have one of the greatest playoff runs of all time? Like, this is one that I think absolutely has to be in the conversation if you're going to try to argue against it. And this one's a pretty good case. You know, Michael Jordan in 1991, he averaged 31.1 points per game, 6.4 rebounds per game, and 8.4 assists per game over the playoff run. Of course, capping off an incredible season for Jordan and the Bulls, winning their first NBA championship and basically transforming the NBA overnight. I mean, they you know, as their playoff run goes, and I'll discuss this, you know, they cast off the Detroit Pistons, they're gone. They cast off Magic Johnson and the Lakers, they're gone. Like, essentially overnight, just kind of transformed the entire NBA. And it's like, okay, now it's us and it's our league. And it pretty much was their league for the rest of the decade, short of Michael Jordan obviously retiring for a brief run there. But as far as this playoff run, third best in win shares per 48 of any individual playoff run, second best box plus minus, and the fifth best PER of all those playoff runs that we talked about. So just, yeah, really, really, I mean, top tier stuff across the board. Real quickly, just kind of a recap of what he did in the playoffs. First round, he had 29 points per game, 4.7 rebounds per game, 6 assists per game on 52.5% shooting. And this is the Bulls and Jordan just pummeling the Knicks. They sweep them in three games. They win game one by 41 points as well. Just to kind of say, okay, we're here and no one's going to be able to beat us. And very few people were able to beat them. Second round, 33 points per game for Jordan, 8 rebounds per game, 7.8 assists per game. So very well-rounded second round for Jordan on 48.9% shooting. Philadelphia, they get one, you know, on the Bulls, but basically MJ and Chicago, they knock out Charles Barkley and the crew in five games. As I said, ironically, Jordan's highest scoring game, he had 46 in game three, is the Bulls' only loss. But game five, he had 38 points. He got 19 rebounds and 7 assists. And the 19 rebounds is actually Jordan's career high as well. So not known for having, you know, just prolific rebounding games, what he does there in game five. And then the third round, maybe the most important round for the Bulls in the playoffs, Jordan averages 29.8. Points per game, 5.3 rebounds per game, 7 assists per game on 35.5% shooting. And this is when they make quick work of the Detroit Pistons, basically just completely sweep them, knock them off the court. The rivalry is over. They fell to the Pistons in 7 games last the prior year, and it felt like, oh man, if the Jordan and the Bulls are going to make it, they got to get by these guys. And then they got by them in a very big way. And then famously, of course, Isaiah Thomas, Bill Laimbeer, Mark Aguirre, they walk off the court with 7.9 seconds left as to not congratulate or handshake the Bulls. Only Joe Dumars and John Sally shook hands with the Bulls. And Jordan remembered that with John Sally and said, we'll sign you and you cannot do anything and get a ring. You want to do that? And he's like, yes, I do.
I would love to do that. Remember, I shook your hand. Mr. Jordan. Right.
Joe didn't get it.
Joe would.
He didn't bury him. He hasn't buried him for the rest of his life. Like he's buried Isaiah.
Like Isaiah, right. Yeah.
So I guess that helps a little bit. But
I don't recall any shit talking to Joe Dumars.
I'm trying to remember The Last Dance. I think he was pretty complimentary of Joe Dumars, or just didn't mention him or forgot.
Yeah, probably.
Him probably
just didn't mention him. They probably forgot. Yeah, a lot of people forgot about Joe Dumars. Joe Dumars was a great player, but Joe Dumars is the kind of guy you kind of just forget about because it's not like a lot of Joe Dumars highlights out there.
No. He's probably more well known for his just horrific run as Detroit Pistons general manager than he is his playing, unfortunately. And then the NBA Finals, Jordan caps off 31.2 points per game, 6.6 rebounds per game, and 11.4 assists per game. Jordan, obviously, they face off against the Lakers and Magic Johnson. They lose game one despite 36 points, 12 assists, and 8 rebounds from Jordan. Then they kind of transform their defense a little bit. They put Scottie Pippen on Magic. They do this, they do that, and essentially then they won every single game the rest of the series and then end up winning their NBA championship, the first one in the franchise's history. And interestingly enough, Jordan had double-digit assists in 4 of the 5 finals games, and he only had 9 in game 3. So he was definitely moving the ball around in that finals as well. And that's probably helps out this as well. If it was just a traditional Jordan, year where he just goes and scores and does all that, maybe the advanced stats don't like it as much, but the fact that he was, scoring a ton and dishing out a ton of assists certainly helped him a bit. And, this Bulls team is famous too, because none of the Bulls players had logged even a minute of NBA Finals experience prior to this. So it's kind of an interesting little note there. And one more note, game 5, last NBA Finals game to be played in the famous Forum as well, because they would not make the NBA Finals for quite a while. And then when they'd make them, they'd be in the Staples / Crypto / whatever it's going to be called next year, because crypto went out of business or something. So insert random business arena here, so there you go.
Yeah. All right. So next we have LeBron James. You want me to take this one? Or would you like to take
I could take this one too. Yeah, because you'll do some plenty of work here in the next minute. Right. So let's talk about this LeBron James 2018 run, which is actually funny because we did an episode many, many years ago about playoff MVPs and the best finals performances. And we did that before this happened, before this series happened, which is unbelievable for how long we've been doing this show. Because I went to those old notes and I'm like, why didn't we write anything about LeBron's 2018? I was like, oh, right, it hadn't happened yet because we have been doing this show for quite a while. So LeBron James, 2018. Of course, this is his last season in Cleveland, his second run with the organization that, of course, featured the famous 3-1 NBA Finals comeback and the title win for the championship-starved city of Cleveland. But by 2018, though, it did feel like this run was kind of on its last legs. But there was one last heroic attempt from LeBron to try to bring yet another title to Cleveland and take down the Warriors and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. And man, this playoff run was one for the ages. 34 points per game, 9.1 rebounds per game, 9.0 assists per game on 53.9% shooting. So now this is the 38th best win shares per 48. For playoff runs, which is not that great. So you look at that and you go, I don't know, is this one really that great? The other stuff, though, jumps off the page. 4th all-time in win shares, 1st all-time in value over replacement player, 7th all-time in box score plus minus, and 4th all-time in PER. So, yeah, that win shares per 48 doesn't look good. He's playing a ton of minutes in these series. He's basically not coming out of the game at all. So, that might affect the per 48 numbers, but everything else just kind of jumps out at you and looks like, oh my God, that's just an all-time great one. First round. He's great out of the gates. 34.4 points per game, 10 rebounds per game, 7.7 assists per game. But I forget about this. They needed the Cleveland Cavaliers 7 games to defeat the Indiana Pacers this year in the first round. And this is not the Paul George Pacers that gave Cleveland so many fits in the mid-2000s. No, or the mid-2010s. This is Victor Oladipo, Bojan Bogdanovic, Miles Turner, and Darren Collison. Like, that's the team. Or Thad Young. Right. Thad Young was there too, obviously, disrupting everything. And they had a bunch of games where they lost by like a bunch. They lost by 18 in game one. They lost by 18 in game one and 34 in game six. They did pull it out, though, obviously, in seven games. But, man, imagine if this whole Cleveland run ends with them just getting, you know, the doors blown off by the Indiana Pacers. And Victor Oladipo, Darren Collison, and Thad Young in the Indiana Pacers. That would have been just an unbelievable thing. But that did not come true. They make it to the second round. And then, unfortunately, for Toronto Raptors fans, you might want to pause or skip ahead a minute, because LeBron averages 34 points per game, 8.3 rebounds per game, 11.3 assists per game. And LeBron and the Cavs just blitzed through to the DeMar DeRozan and the Kyle Lowry Raptors, as they usually did. They just, oh, those poor guys, they just stuck a dagger in them every single year. It's like they go to the absolute limit with like a terrible Pacers team, and then the Raptors come and they just destroy them and just absolutely get rid of them. Four-game sweep, including a 35-point game four win to just completely decimate the Raptors. Then in the third round, another seven-game series for LeBron this time to get through the upstart, young upstart Boston Celtics. 33.6 points per game, 9 rebounds per game, 8.4 assists per game. LeBron scores 46 points in game seven and then goes for 35, 15, and 9 in game seven to punch the Cavs into the NBA Finals, where they again will be facing the Golden State Warriors. Of course, this time also the Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green Warriors. LeBron averages 34 points per game, 8.5 rebounds per game, 10 assists per game. But it's the Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green Warriors, so they get swept in four games. And LeBron does everything he can here. I mean, he busts his ass in game one. He scores 51 points, and the Cavs still lose by 10. That at that point, he's probably game. Just like, all right. Yeah. Right. You know, like, I remember at the time, too, that series. Like, he scored 51, they lost, and he was just like, all right, man. Like, you know, what are we going to do here? And then they got blitzed pretty tough. And I mean, they lost by 10, 19, 8, and then finally 23 points in the game four. I don't even remember that game, to be honest. I don't remember the Warriors winning by 23 in game four of that year's NBA Finals. But
The game one was J.R. Smith game when he, he forgot to take I forget exactly what happened, but obviously you've seen the meme with LeBron like having his hands.
Smith game.
Yeah. Did he just forget to take the shot or,
J.R. Smith game was he didn't do anything. He just dribbled in the backcourt. Am I right? Like, he was just like dribbling and they're like, well, do something, call a timeout, shoot the ball, do whatever, do something. And then he just dribbled. They were tied and he thought they were like leading or something like that. So then they went into overtime. And then of course they ended up losing that game by, you know, by 10. So that was the moment that LeBron's soul left his body. And he was just like, I'm going to go to Los Angeles and make Space Jam 2. Like, this is stupid.
And that's one of the very few 50-point games in a finals, of course, as well. So, yeah, he had two buzzer beaters in those playoffs. One against the Pacers, which of course helped them win that series, and then the other against the Raptors. Which was, I think, like game three, which basically like ended any chance the Raptors had in that series. All right. Next, we have Julius Erving, the 1976 ABA playoffs. 34.7 points per game, 12.6 rebounds, 4.9 assists, a 32 PER, which is fourth all time, 12.5 box score plus minus, which is seventh all time, and a 0.321 win shares per 48, which is seventh all time. So, it was only two rounds that they played. The Nets defeated the Spurs in the semifinals. Irving with the Nets down 2-1, Doc had 35 and 14 in a very close win, including a game winning dunk in that game four of that series. Was known for a bench clearing brawl involving Brian Taylor and George Karl, Furious George.
And the Spurs got furious. Do you know who won that fight? I
I don't think anybody exactly.
There's no winners. No fight. There's never a winner in a fight. It's only losers. Because come on,
that
guys.
Was one where like almost everybody got involved in that one. I don't think Doc himself got involved, but very much everybody else got.
Nah, he's too cool and for that shit. Yeah, he's too. He's just, yeah. Yeah, you guys are right. I'm gonna be over
except
here.
Unless it's Larry Bird, he's not gonna be punching.
Well, and he should punch Larry Bird for sure.
Yeah, well, understandably, right. You punch Larry Bird. Any chance you get, you punch Larry Bird. And of course, the funny thing is the Spurs. The Spurs, the Nets had a huge trade. Basically, like four guys went from one team to the other. You know, so the Spurs had George Gervin. He played with the Squires, Larry Cannon, and Billy Paulson. I think a couple other guys. So they were all, you know, so like it was, guys who had been teammates, which is pretty funny. And a lot of them had won the 74 championship together. So, and then Irving at 32-10 in a very close game 5 win, 41-12, including 31 in the second half and a 1-point loss. And then in game 7, Irving had 28-18-8 to help his team win the series in the game 7 clincher, 121-114. So then was on to the finals, the Denver Nuggets. Nuggets had David Thompson, Dan Issel, and Bobby Jones. They were the favorites. They had better depth, but Irving was just so good. Despite the defense of Jones, his future 76ers running mate, he had 45-12-4 in the first game, including 18 of the Nets' final 22 points in a 2-point game 1 win, including a baseline game winning jumper. A very close game 2 loss. They had 48-14-8, including 25 points in the fourth quarter, which is a finals record for either the NBA or the ABA. And then, you know, he had 31-10-4 with 4 blocks in game 3, 34-15-6 in game 4. So at this point, they have a 3-1 series lead. Game 5, Denver wins by 8, but Irving 37-15-5. And game 6, Denver led 80-58 midway through the third quarter in New York, but the Nets, they do a full court press. It changes the game. Irving has 5 steals in the final 17 minutes. They get a 54-26 run for 112-106 win. Super John Williams had 16 points in the fourth quarter. Irving only had 31 points with 19 rebounds and 5 assists. David Thompson, for his credit, had 42 points, and Issel had a 30-20 game as well. So lots of standout performances there. And then Irving was one of only 2 players ever to lead both teams in scoring, rebounding, assists, steals, and block shots in one playoff series. The other was LeBron James in the 2016 finals. So, fun fact.
Yeah, good stuff there. But just another great season there, and another definite contender for one of the great runs ever. And that's one that probably won't get brought up as much, obviously, being in the ABA and that being, you know, a weird hangup for a lot of people of, you know, addressing the ABA history as NBA history or whatever. So that's one that most likely you'll probably only hear, you know, us discuss that as one of the great playoff runs of all time, because most other people will just ignore it because it happened in the ABA, which is definitely not fair.
Right. Yeah, definitely. So another great one, George Mikan, 19.4 points per game, 13.2 rebounds per game, 1.9 assists, a 0.391 win shares per 48, and a 33.6 PER. The win shares per 48 is second all time. The PER is also second best playoff all time. And by the way, the win shares per 48 of 3.91, that is way above the third best of 0.333. Like, it's like you know, point 0.06 more. That is a huge disparity between the second best and the first best. Now, obviously 1954 was a different time. It was pre-shot clock, you know, strong integration of the game. Very different game. I'm not saying Mikan would have, been dominant later on, but still very impressive in the context. The Lakers, they won the first and last ever Western round robin. I think we've talked a little bit about the round robin, and honestly, I didn't really understand the round robin that well, but now that we've have the play-in, it's similar to the play-in, only basically there's 3 teams involved. And then each of them has to play each other two times, or, you know, so, in this case, the Lakers beat the Pistons 2-0, the Royals beat the Pistons 2-0, and then that meant the Lakers and the Royals played, and they could have played two games, but because because of the situation, the Lakers only had to beat the Royals once. So, in any case, that led them to be in the Western Division Final, which the Lakers ended up winning with Mike and averaging 20.7 points per game. Then the Lakers battled the Nationals in an all-time classic seven-game series. In his best game of this series, Mike and put up 30 points on 61% field goal percentage, which is very good at the time, 15 rebounds and 3 assists in Game 3. And this is Mike, and like, you know, he's 29 getting into 30, which doesn't sound that old, but at the time, you know, given the shape that he was in, you know, kind of on fumes at this point. I mean, he's still effective, but he's still one of the best players in the league, but no longer like the dominant player he was 2 or 3 years before. You know, still really good, but definitely not putting up all those kinds of numbers all the time. So very impressive thing. Right.
And what, yeah, like 2 years away from actually retiring as well, or another, he
came back because he retired after this.
Oh, right.
And then came back for a short, you know, comeback, which didn't go very well. But so this was the sixth title for the Lakers in 7 years across three different leagues, the NBA, the BAA, and the NBL. Plus, Mike had won another NBL title with the Chicago American Gears. So Mike had just pretty much won titles almost every single year he played.
Christian Brown on the Denver Nuggets, the three high school titles, a college title, and now an NBA title. So
yeah,
George, right. Mike and Christian Brown, essentially, it's like looking in the mirror. The same. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. All right, what do we got next?
We got Wilt Chamberlain, 1964. There are always Wilt stats, and there's even more Wilt stats here as we have the 1964 playoff run for Wilt Chamberlain. 34.7 points per game, 25.2 rebounds per game, 3.3 assists per game. This is before he quite valued passing the ball and was more like, no, I'm going to put the ball in the rim. That's what's more fun. Yeah. Nobody had gotten through to Wilt just quite yet. That sometimes passing the ball might be good. So that's fine, though, because it got him to 0.323 win shares per 48, the fifth best ever for a playoff run, and a 31.3 PER, the 10th best ever for a playoff run. Quickly, conference finals, he averages 38.6 points per game, 23.4 rebounds per game, and 3.9 assists per game. It takes him seven games, to him and the Warriors, seven games to defeat the St. Louis Hawks. But obviously, thanks to Wilt's heroics, they do it. He scores 46 points in Game 3, 50 points in Game 5, and goes for 39 and 30 in Game 7 in a 10-point win to move on to the NBA Finals. And you'll be shocked to hear this, but Wilt makes it to the finals where he faces and then loses to Bill Russell and the Boston Celtics. So there's always a Wilt stat, and there's almost always Wilt losing in the finals to Bill Russell, if it's possible, in the 60s, yes, particularly.
In this case, this was actually the first time that Wilt lost in the finals, because this was after the Warriors moved from Philly to San Francisco.
Right, before
it had been in the conference or division finals. Now this is actually in the finals. Yes, so...
The first of unfortunately many for poor, yes, Wilt, but 29.2 points per game, 27.6 rebounds per game, 2.4 assists per game. So a great finals, but when you're Wilt Chamberlain, you know, averaging just under 30 points isn't really going to cut it when you're like one of the more dominant players ever, and you're pretty much relied upon to do almost all the scoring for a team, and you score under 30, and you're against Bill Russell, you know, it does kind of hurt a little bit, and the Warriors lose by 6 in Game 5. Despite 30 points and 27 rebounds from Wilt. So a great run that ultimately does not end in a title because, of course, yeah, it's Wilt versus the Russell and the Celtics. So
the Celtics were really, really good team. Yeah, yeah. And the 64 Celtics were basically like might have been the best version of that dynasty. I mean, they still had all the stalwarts in their prime, and they were also, you know, had Havlicek and, you know, some of the other guys coming up. So that was an extra tough year for Wilt to do that. And actually, you know, thinking about it, I never really thought about this, but Wilt and Russell only met twice in the actual finals.
Oh, that's right. It was mostly like, yeah, Eastern Conference mostly finals
Eastern,
and stuff.
Eastern yeah, finals. Yeah. 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 So that's
Eastern division, I should say.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I wasn't going to correct you there, Rich, because, you know, we all make mistakes. All right. Next, we have Tim Duncan, 2003, 24.7 points per game, 15.4 rebounds, 5.3 assists. He has 5.9 9 assists, which is the most ever in a postseason. His win share per 48 was 26th, which is obviously still very good, although not among the top tier. Now, the win shares, of course, are influenced by the amount of games and minutes you play, and you know the fact that he played really deep into the playoffs and had 24 games, I believe, helps out this. But for some credit for just persevering through a really tough playoff set, they took out some powerhouses this year.
They did.
You got the Suns. This is pre Steve Nash, but you got Stephon Murray, the original Steph, who's certainly can score and a productive player. Yeah, Sean Marion, near the beginning of his career, but we all know what Sean Marion could do. Amari Stoudemire, all same thing, and it took 6 games for the Spurs to win that. Then second round, one of the biggest second rounds ever, I would imagine. The Spurs ending the Shaq and Kobe Lakers 4 in a row chances.
Thank you.
For
does he have 4-peat? Does he have that too, or just 3-peat?
I don't want to take
Pat Riley. I don't even know. He's already sued us.
Riley is probably pretty mad right now.
Yeah, he already sent us a cease and desist. I can't believe it. He also has 4-peat. There you go. I just got a courier letter.
There you go.
Knock at my door. Man. Unbelievable.
That's what happens. Man works fast.
Alonzo Mourning delivered a cease and desist immediately. Unbelievable. Hi. I should have gotten him on the show. I should have gotten him. But regardless, he already left. He's gone. So I should have
brought him in. Wow. Let's see. That's too bad. Yeah, and then. One of the greatest conference finals ever, knocking out a 60-win Mavs squad. You got Dirk, you got Steve Nash, you got Michael Finley all balling out, again, 4-2. And then, they just love this 4-2. Jason Kidd and the New Jersey Nets, again, 4-2. And, he played 24 games, so, again, that allows him to accumulate the most win shares, but he wins the finals MVP. It's second MVP season. And I think I see the similarities to Jokic. Not that they played the same, but there is that similar sort of nonchalance and control about how they play. They never really seem like crazy hurried or bothered that much. They're just in there. They're doing exactly what they want to do at the pace they want to do it. The only time that Duncan ever got animated was going against a foul call. That was the only time that you ever got right. Emotion out of him. Definitely this is another one where it's really strong. And 16th all time in box triple plus minus too. So it wasn't just the fact that they played a lot of games. He's really, he had a strong postseason overall.
Yeah, it's definitely the best of the Duncan runs, too. And it's when he felt the most dominant. I mean, despite the team, only, like you said, it needing 6 games to beat everybody that they played. But they played a lot of really good teams there. Like,
right.
The second round is the Kobe and Shaq Lakers. I mean, it's the end of the pretty much close to the end of the line of the Kobe and Shaq Lakers. Obviously, they try to bring it back the next year with, Peyton and Malone and stuff. But, that's a big team to beat in, the second round and then having to go to face that really, really, really good Mavs team, a high-powered Mavs team, team that, tried to play a much different style than the slow it down at that time Spurs or whatever. And and Jason Kidd and the Nets, people will go back and laugh at that team or whatever. They're a pretty damn good team and had some really good talent on that team with Kidd and Jefferson and Kenyon Martin and stuff. So it's I think I forget if they had acquired Mutombo at that time yet or not. I forget if he was there at that because I know he bounced.
I think he was.
I want to say he was.
On
a
team. He was on a team. Yeah.
So I mean, that's a good team. That's a really, really good team. So the West, the West was really, the West was really good, and the East, it wasn't that great, but the Nets made it out of the East, and that's the team that they had to face. So and like you said, it's probably a big reason why is that you go back and you watch those games, and Duncan's just so nonchalant about how he's getting his points and stuff. And I went back and watched the 2003, the finals, the game winning, the final game, game six. And you see Duncan, and I think I forget how much I'm not looking at the number right now, but I know he scored a pretty good amount of points, but they're all bank shots from 11 feet away. They're all these kind of just little jab step into the lane, do a little baby hook type thing. They're just not these explosive things. And you're right that, you know, he is probably similar to Jokic in the sense that a lot of people are not appreciating him in the moment. Hopefully people don't make the same mistake that they did with Duncan and just go, oh, this guy's boring, or I don't quite get it. And we saw a little bit of that, you know, leading into the finals this year, where people were like, what's the story with the Nuggets? What are the narratives? And it's like, I don't know. Yeah. Do your job. There's a lot.
Well,
there.
I get people who kind of thought that the Spurs were a little boring, especially that.
Oh yeah.
That
era particular team was boring.
Style.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think Duncan is more like you have to appreciate the subtleties of basketball to really appreciate Duncan.
Sure.
I don't think Jokic is like that. Like, I think you could be like a regular, just like old guy off the ground and just be amazed by some of the things that he's, particularly the passing. That last game, the clinching game for Duncan, 21 points, 20 rebounds, 10 assists, and 8 blocks. So coming very close to a quadruple double. Yeah,
and trust me, 21 points in the 2003 NBA Finals may as well be 70.
It's like 50.
Be 75 points, given the pace that those two teams were playing at. So let me tell you, that is not a fast game. You go back and watch that, it's like basketball for a different planet, because it's like, you know, shot clock down to one. All right, let's get the shot up.
Right.
And it's like,
let's get it off.
Yeah, it's like,
isolate for 20 seconds and, you know, we'll get a shot here.
It's a different game indeed. A different game indeed.
Yes.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
All right, so we've gone into the finals runs. Now we're going to get into some of the early exits.
Yeah, we'll start here with LeBron James in 2009. And obviously LeBron and the Cavaliers exited the playoffs, 13-point loss at the hands of the very ahead of their time Orlando Magic, the team that basically completely destroyed the LeBron James Cavaliers by putting a guy who could shoot threes at power forward, and the Cavs really had no idea what to do with it and kind of essentially sunk that entire team, which is unbelievable. In hindsight, it's like, oh yeah, that was kind of like the beginning of what we see with a lot of teams today. But, you know, at the time it was just like, what is going on? What is happening? But we shouldn't lose sight of despite all that, an all-time great playoff run from LeBron that he had. And you can make a real case that it was the best ever. Unless you need to cap it off with a finals run or a title for it to really matter, which I get why some people might say, well, it can't be the best ever if the guy didn't make it to the finals or he didn't make it to, you know, win a title or whatever. But I'm going to give you the numbers here, and God damn, this might be it. 35.3 points per game, 9.1 rebounds per game, and 7.3 assists per game on 51% shooting. Now, mind you, that's in 2009, and the man's nearly averaging 40 points in a playoff run. That's a completely different era, different pace, a much slower pace. Threes aren't as prevalent as they are. I mean, those are just absurd numbers. In
62% true shooting. Dude, yeah. 62% true shooting, too. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Insane. Yeah. Right. It's crazy. Right. So great numbers, no doubt. And the advanced stats even more blow the doors off. 0.399 win shares per 48, the best ever. Like, very much the best ever. 4.8 win shares, the eighth best ever. That's a problem because, of course, he, you know, doesn't make it to the finals. Had he added a few more games, he might have had a real case have the most win shares ever, but doesn't happen there. 2.9 valuable replacement player. Again, that's something that you accumulate, but that's good enough for seventh best ever, again, without making it to the finals, which is crazy. 17.5 block score plus minus, the best ever, and 37.4 PR, the best ever in a playoff run either. So it's just like, that's a pretty compelling case that pretty much every advanced metric, win shares per 48, box plus minus, PER, he's the best ever this playoff run.
Plus, if you look at PER, you know, is LeBron's 37.4. Second best is Mike in at 33.6. So that's 4 points difference between
wild.
The first and the second. you know, we talked about the difference between Mikan and the third, which is Kareem and Winchester 48 at 3.9 versus 3.32. And LeBron's up there, obviously, even higher, 3.99. You know, the box score plus minus is, you know, like LeBron's is 17.5. The second best is 14.6. So not only are these numbers in these cases the best ever, but they're the best ever by a huge margin over like the second or third best numbers. So that's just crazy. You can think of whatever you want. Obviously, none of these numbers are perfect. They all have, you know, they all have flaws, but just the kind of the sheer number of how many, they're all measuring different things, but when they all pretty much agree that it's the best or very close to the best playoff performance, that something worth listening to.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And yeah, this run, I forgot how great this run was as well. The first round, he averages 32 points per game, 11.3 rebounds per game, 7.5 assists per game. Easy dismantling of the Pistons at the time. It's not a great Pistons team at this time anyway.
That was the end of the Iverson Pistons, I believe.
Yes. As we all know them, the Iverson Pistons. Iverson Pistons. The Cavs win that series. They win by 18, 12, 11, and 21. So it's not even a case whatsoever. Just a complete barn burner for the Cavs. Second round, he averages 33.8 points per game, 8.3 rebounds per game, 6 assists per game. Another sweep and another absolute destruction of, unfortunately, your Atlanta Hawks. He wins by I'll say the Cavs, but it's really him. The second best player is Mo Williams, so it's he.
Right.
No offense to my man Mo or Damon Jones or whatever.
That is all star Mo Williams.
That's true. It is all star Mo Williams.
Yeah,
they win that series. They win by 27, 20, 15, and 10. LeBron scores 47 points in game four as well.
I need to interrupt for a moment. So I went to Mo Williams' basketball reference page. Who decided that Mo Williams could nickname himself the Hitman?
The Hitman? No, come on.
No, I'm afraid not. I'm sorry.
That's not going to happen.
I'm going to have to rescind that. Nope.
The Hitman. Is that like, how many other nicknames does he have? Is that like just one?
That's the only one.
The only one is the Hitman?
Yeah.
The Hitman Mo Williams? Okay.
Yeah. Like, what about Alabama Mo?
There's got to be something. Yeah, the Hitman. Okay.
Yeah. All Mississippi Mo. He went to high school in Mississippi. That's his nickname now. Mississippi Mo.
Yeah. We could run that by him, but I think I can't imagine a problem with it.
So. He doesn't get a choice. It's his nickname. So, yeah.
That's true. Yeah. You don't get to pick your own nickname. That's
exactly.
Not cool.
Yeah.
And then in the third round, LeBron averages 38.5 points per game, 8.3 rebounds per game, 8 assists per game. But one of the most shocking upsets in NBA history happens. A potential LeBron versus Kobe finals is yanked away by Dwight Fart Howard and Rashard Lewis and Stan Van Gundy and these bastards, Michael Pietrus and all these guys just shooting threes and spreading the floor and doing all this dumb stuff. LeBron has a masterful game one. He scores 49 points, but the Cavs lose by one, which is, I mean, they didn't lose a game the entire playoffs into this, but hey, we lose by one. We scored 49. That's all right. We'll get back at it. No. They win game two by one, just barely able to do it. They lose game three by 10. They lose game four by two. LeBron has 3 40-point games in the series, and his game six is so shocking for a lot of those reasons. Is he had such a great playoffs up to that run, such great averages. All those things were just top tier stuff. Then in the game six, 25 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, 8 of 20 shooting. So that's a good game for a lot of people. But not really for LeBron and not really in a special year like this. And that led to a lot of the, hey, what's going on with LeBron? Does he want to leave? And then the whole next year was like, is this it? Because he was obviously, the contract was done. And it all pointed to that game six, which is not a very good, 25-7-7. It's a very good game. Right. But I do remember that being a big like, oh, has LeBron given up? Can he not do it in the big game? Like all the dumb narrative stuff that occurred in 2009. And luckily, we're all smarter and we don't have weird narratives about LeBron anymore ever again, That game is 20 years ago at this point.
And especially the next year when the playoff series against Boston, it just added on to that afterward. Yeah. I was thinking, I was kind of thinking about the 09 Cavs today. And it's just like, if that team had had somebody as good as Jamal Murray, like, you know, if like Mo Williams had been as good as Jamal Murray, like that team that team probably would have won a championship. You know, like that, like yeah. that oh, was yeah. the kind of player that LeBron needed, you know, like just like the right kind of guy. Like just basically, I mean, Jamal Murray is much more than a better version of Mo Williams, but like, you know, it just it's sort of like he needed just that one guy who could complement what he was doing on there. And, you know, I think a Jamal Murray type of player, you know, would have fit that, you know, who that would have been at the time. And obviously, you know, they actually did a solid job. They did some bad drafting and did a bad job of building the team, but they did kind of have a nice job of like making some trades and getting some complimentary pieces around them. They just didn't have that second. Like they had like everything after the third player. Like if Mo Williams had been the third player, that would have been fine.
Oh well, yeah. Cause then your Daniel Gibson's and your Anderson Varejao's and Delonte West's and Zildjonas Ilgauskas. And
that's right. Yeah. They had good pieces. Yeah. And even Ben Wallace, like, you know, like brought defense and rebounding. And like, I mean, they had a good mix of guys. They just didn't have a second guy. Like that was, they would have been perfect for LeBron had they had, you know, somebody at just a bit of a higher level than Mo Williams, you know. So
right, and they tried like Anton Jameson, and they tried Shaquille O'Neal. Right. But like you said, those are all guys that weren't you know. Anton Jameson, a great number three, but not that number two guy. Anton Jameson is like the Cleveland Cavaliers' Michael Porter or Aaron Gordon is perfect. Yeah, that would have been a good role for him, but they needed that Jamal Murray, and unfortunately, as good and as fun as Mo Williams was, he wasn't that guy, and that team. As good as they were with their second best player being Mo Williams is pretty phenomenal.
Although, yeah, I'm sure this will change, but Mo Williams, as we mentioned, has been an all-star. Jamal Murray has not yet been an all-star.
Right, so, right.
Yeah. So. All right. Next, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, 1976 to 77. I think we talked about this one before, but yeah, this was Kareem's second year in Los Angeles. And yeah, 34.6 points per game. 17.7 rebounds per game, 4.1 assists. This was, if you look at, you know, the if you look at the ranks here, fourth all time in win shares per 48, eighth all time in box score plus minus, third all time in PER. So another great one, but definitely another series of disappointing results. The Lakers, who had the best record in the regular season, end up falling in the Western Conference Finals to Portland. They get swept by Portland. Of course, you know, the great 77 Blazers team with Bill Walton and company. They did top the Warriors in a seven-game series in the semifinals, which basically ended, you know, the title window of the Rick Barry, Jamal Wilkes, you know, that team that won the 75 championship and, you know, had Barry plus all these young players that you kind of – ended that run. It makes you wonder, hey, Jamal Wilkes, he went to the Lakers right after that in free agency. Was he a mole? Dun, dun, dun. Mm. Yeah. Just like Andre Iguodala for the Nuggets going to the Warriors. Same situation?
I mean,
you decide.
We're just giving you the facts.
We just report it.
Yeah, we just report it. You decide.
We're asking questions here. Yeah, right. We're just asking questions.
Right.
I mean, we're not doing anything bad. We're just asking questions.
No, we just want you know, you to think. You know, you to yeah. I like it.
Yeah. Don't be a sheeple. You know.
Exercise
your free speech on, you know, Elon's Twitter. Go for it. You know.
please do. Right. Please don't delete the app.
Don't support that asshole. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Kawhi Leonard, 2017. Remember this one? It was looking like an all-time great run. Gets derailed by Zaza Pachulia's big fucking feet that Kawhi Leonard just couldn't avoid. Although he did roll his ankle in the series before, so it's not all Zaza's fault, but it's mostly Zaza's fault. Effectively ending Leonard's tenure in San Antonio. He had that weird thing where he came back for like four games and then went away again. Right. That's a very weird timeline. The Kawhi Leonard in San Antonio timeline. Right. But 27.7 points per game, 7.8 rebounds per game, 4.6 assists per game on 52.5% shooting, 0.314 win shares per 48, eighth best ever, 14.2 box score plus minus, the third best ever, and 31.5 PER, the ninth best ever. So pretty good run there. The numbers don't jump off the page that much to me, so it's kind of weird, but like the advanced stats definitely like him more than maybe the counting stats do. First round. Now, this is great. This is undoubtedly great. 31.2 points per game, six rebounds per game, 3.8 assists per game. It takes six games, actually, for the Spurs to get past the pesky Grizzlies. They always had trouble with the Grizzlies of this era. But Kawhi does lead the Spurs into the second round. The grit and grind Grizzlies just always gave the Spurs, like throughout the whole mid-2010s, like gave them always fits in the playoffs. Second round, 23.8 points per game, 9.8 rebounds per game, 5.8 assists per game. So again, counting stats don't really jump off the board there. I guess 9.8 and 23.8 is solid as hell. But, you know, an ankle injury does take him out of game six, which, not a good sign for what's going to come in a bit. But he does have a good series, including 34 points in game two. And then in the conference finals, of course, he only plays one game and doesn't even play the full game. I think he plays about 24 or 25 minutes. He gets 26 points, 8 rebounds, and 3 assists in that game. But he hurts his ankle again, will not play again in that postseason, and then effectively ends his run with the San Antonio Spurs. So the counting stats are not like jump off the page great, but Kawhi Leonard was a guy who affected the game in so many different ways with his defense and his steals and just all that sort of stuff. So yeah, the advanced stats like this one a little bit more, but yeah, if you just look at this one, like overall, you know, 27.7 points per game, 7.8 rebounds per game, you know, 4.6 assists per game. Don't really necessarily you think immediately as like, oh, that's one of the greatest runs of all time. But, you know, defense wise, he was pretty damn special at that time.
Yeah. And this one, you know, he has a 67% true shooting percentage. So that certainly helps. You know, that's getting them up there. And yeah, it's interesting. You know, we have a list of about, you know, like 120 or so playoff performances that, you know, a spreadsheet that we kind of came up with, you know, among the greatest on here, and Kawhi Leonard has four of them, which, you know, I mean, he's obviously known as a great postseason player, and the runs he had, particularly the 2019 run with the Raptors, are all fantastic. But just given the, you know, amount of time he's missed in the injuries and stuff, I wouldn't necessarily think of him as having that many on this list, but that, you know, that like, you know, Kevin Durant is three on this list. Larry Bird is two. Like, it's like, you know, some great players with some great playoff runs only have a, you know, limited amount, but he has four in a, you know, in less time playing than a lot of these guys. So, which is, you know, pretty interesting. All right. Michael Jordan, another one, 1990, the year before possibly the greatest ever. Yeah, this is not too bad either. 36, 0.7 points per game on 59 true shooting, 7.2 rebounds, 6.8 assists, 2.8 steals per game, a 12th in value of replacement player, 5th in box score plus minus, and 8th in PER. And hey, they were perhaps a Scottie Pippen migraine away from being in the finals a year ahead of schedule. They topped Milwaukee in the first round, easily crushed Philly in the second round. Jordan in that Philly series had 45, 49, and 45 again in consecutive games. Jordan's best game in the seven-game loss against the Pistons in the Eastern Conference Final, Game 3, which was a 107-102 win in Chicago. Chicago's first win in that series. Jordan had 47 points on 62% true shooting, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals. So Michael Jordan, pretty good. By the way, Michael Jordan on our spreadsheet has 8 series here. So, yeah, just to give you an idea, and this isn't necessarily like a comprehensive one because we didn't go through everything. But Wilt has 4, Tim Duncan has 4, Steph Curry only has 1, Shaq has 7. Let's see, Jokic has 2, Moses Malone just has 1, Jordan, as we mentioned, has 8, Magic has 2, LeBron has 8. No, I'm sorry, LeBron has 10, actually. Kobe has 2. Kareem has 5. Irving has 3. Hakeem and Giannis both have 2. You know, nobody else. Russell has 3. So just to kind of give you a sense of the numbers of, you know, it's kind of how many times these guys put up, you know, sort of an all-time series in one of these stats. That's that. So got one more category left. This is the a few really – you probably look at this list of guys and we haven't like really surprised that these would be anywhere near the best playoff season. Now, these are definitely not among the best of the best, but like still you could make a case that these are in the top 75 or so best ever playoff performances, which is, you know, pretty amazing. So first we got Marcus Johnson, 1978 playoffs. He had 24 points per game on almost 60 true shooting, 12.4 rebounds, 3.4 assists. This was a very surprising Bucks team because they're just emerging from the shadows of the Kareem era. And Johnson is a rookie at this point, mm-hmm. but he is, you know, clearly their best player. This performance is 23rd all times in win shares per 48, which is tied with 2017 Kevin Durant, which might be his best playoff run. And also, and we're going to get to it below, and which is kind of amazing, 1999 Marcus Camby. So we're going to get that one below.
Yeah, as we all know. Yeah, because when you clicked on this episode, you thought, all right, when are they going to get to Marquise Johnson in 1978 right. and Marcus Camby in 1999? And do not worry, when we talk about the best playoff performances ever, we're going to get to Johnson 78 and Camby's 99. Of course we're going to get there.
Absolutely, of course. Yes. So, you know, they were able to, that was really a very good team. And yeah, he had, he was 72nd in PER all time, tied with 1992 Michael Jordan, 2005 Tracy McGrady. So you're just looking at some of these, you know, series. So the first, the Bucks upset a heavily favored Suns team 2-0, who were led by another rookie forward, Walter Davis, who had a nice series of his own as well, 25 points per game, 8.5 rebounds, 4 assists per game. Plus, you got Paul Westphal and Alvin Adams. So, you know, that was the core of their team. Plus, now Walter Davis of the team that went to the finals just a couple years before. So, it was only a 3-game series. But so, and then they took a tough Denver Nuggets team. This is with, you know, David Thompson, Dan Issel, Bobby Jones, you know, who had just gone to the finals, the ABA finals a couple years before, we just talked about, to 7 games in the West semis. Probably the best NBA Nuggets team, you know, before the current era, outside of maybe the 2009 squad. So
yeah, that's fair. That's definitely fair. Yeah,
right. And then the Bucks would falter a bit in the next season with some amazingly bad luck. And they moved on to the East, and then, you know, helped make the NBA more fun and competitive in the 80s by playing an awesome style and by having some great series with the Sixers and the Celtics, of course, although never able to make finals on their own. So you want to talk about Marcus Camby?
I'd love to talk about Marcus Camby's 1999. And the Knicks, much like this year's Miami team, you know, didn't have much of a prayer as an 8 seed. Obviously, the 8 seed in 1999, a little different given the, you know, the lockout season and whatnot. But still, nobody really gave them any chance to make it through. They weren't exactly a great regular season team, but they were able to kind of defy those expectations and make it all the way to the NBA Finals. And they were a very weird team, too. And a collection of misfits and outcasts and guys who just couldn't quite make it in their first, you know, stops or their seconds or whatever, and then came together on this team and just kind of worked. You have Allen Houston, who obviously had a run as, you know, running mate for Grant Hill and the second best guy for the Detroit Pistons, never quite worked out. He comes here to New York and is able to kind of excel. You have Larry Johnson, who obviously had so much turmoil with, you know, it with the Charlotte Hornets and felt like he was going to be a big deal, and then it kind of petered out a little bit. Now he's here. Latrell Sprewell, obviously the issues in Golden State, including, you know, choking out your head coach, is going to cause a little bit of a turmoil and cause you to, you know, maybe not be endearing yourself to the franchise. So they send him over to New York, and they all come together. And Marcus Camby too, you know, had a bunch of stops and starts in Toronto and whatnot, and now he's here in New York. And you know, they led the charge. They beat the Heat, they beat the Hawks, and they beat the Pacers to make it to the NBA Finals. And then when Patrick Ewing went out with an injury, Marcus Camby kind of filled in at center. And, you know, his box score stats, they're not going to jump off the page. They're 10.4 points per game, 7.7 rebounds per game, 1.2 steals per game, 1.9 blocks per game. But he does finish, regardless, 23rd all time in playoff seasons for win shares per 48. So did affect the game in a lot of ways. And, yeah, not a guy that you would assume would be on this list, but a great playoff run for Marcus Camby in 1999.
Yeah, no, that was definitely one that surprised me a little bit. Yeah, and you mentioned, like, yeah, the Knicks weren't the typical 8th seed. So they were basically 2 games away from being a 5th seed. And they were only, like, you know, 6 games behind the there are three teams that finished with the best record in the East at 33-17, the Heat, the Magic, and the Pacers. So yeah, they were not that far from, obviously, it was obviously a weird season with it being the lockout, only 50 games. So in retrospect, less surprising, but at the time, certainly was a surprise, especially with Ewing out, you know, and the other guys kind of leading them, and, you know, the whole Ewing theory thing and all that good stuff. But so next we got Jimmy Jones, not a household name, no. But in 1969, he helped the New Orleans Buccaneers make a deep playoff run a year after, in 68, they had made the ABA finals. You know, Jimmy Jones, great ABA career, 6 All-Stars, 3 All-ABA nods, did play a little bit in the NBA with the Washington Bullets in the 70s. In mid 70s and after his ABA career. But yeah, they Jones helped take the Bucks, who were shorthanded. They lost Larry Brown and Doug Moe from that powerhouse finals team, took them pretty deep in the playoffs. He averaged 30.2 points per game, 61% true shooting, 55.3 rebounds per game, 5.4 assists. The Bucks took down the Dallas Chaparrals in 7 games before they fell to the powerhouse Oakland Hawks, who now had Doug Moe and Larry Brown, along with the lethal Warren Jabali. And they also on their roster, but not playing at the time because of injuries, Rick Barry. They didn't even need Rick Barry because they, yeah. You know, they blazed through the season in the finals without him. But yeah, this performance is 29th in all-time Winchester 48, which is tied with 2017 LeBron James, just to give you kind of a sense of how good this playoff performance is considered, at least by this metric. 51st in PER, which is tied for the 1961 Elgin Baylor run. So, you know, it's a little quirky probably, but a interesting one. And we got one more for you. Johnny Moore.
Who?
Yeah, Johnny Moore, 1983. So Johnny Moore, a very solid, stalwart point guard for the Spurs in the first half of the 80s. He led the league in assists in 1982, but was never an all-star, never all NBA, anything like that. In 1983 playoffs, taking on the Nuggets and the Lakers, but he played like a Hall of Famer. Total, he averaged 22.5 points per game, on 58 true shooting, 14.6 assists per game, 2.5 steals per game. In a 1-point win against the Nuggets, he had 39 points, 8 rebounds, 12 assists, and 5 steals in the same game. 5 games overall, he had at least 20 points and 17 assists. So that's not that far from averaging 20-20 in those 5 games. It's small sample size, yes, but that's ball in there. For some context, he is 44th all-time in box score plus minus for playoff season. That is better than Dwayne Wade in 2006 or Magic Johnson in 1987, which are, you know, of course, considered among the best, you know, playoff runs, certainly finals runs of all time. Now, Johnny Moore didn't get to the finals. They lost to the Lakers. He was very solid in the early to mid 80s. Unfortunately, his career was cut short. He contracted a rare form of meningitis called desert fever that, you know, kept him out for a long time. He made some mini comebacks, but was never really the same player and ended up having to retire young. But his number is retired by the Spurs there, you know, the 00, I believe. So,
yep. 00.
Interesting guy, interesting run in that playoffs and some incredible games. And it sort of seemed like it's out of nowhere. Probably some of it was playing the Nuggets, you know. but he played well against the Lakers too. I mean, you know, right. He absolutely bought out that entire run. I mean, every game except for one in that entire run was like a really awesome game.
No, playing the Nuggets helps, but yeah, you can't discount that he did, you know, very similar stuff against the Lakers too, a very, very good Lakers team at that point too. And you look at his numbers, and yeah, he's a guy who, you know, had really good, you know, you could see the potential there. You could see, you know, he's leading the league, sure. You know, almost 10 assists per game in multiple years. He does get to 10 assists per game in 1 year as well. But yeah, his career does, as you look at it, looks like he's getting a solid career. Then all of a sudden, yeah, he stops playing ends up, you know, playing in Mexico for a year and stuff. And because of the issues with his health isn't quite there. But a guy that does have his number retired. So I was kind of joking when I did like the who to Johnny Moore guy. Right. A lot of people probably don't know who he is, but he had a pretty good career and is definitely worth remembering for this great, great playoff run that he had.
Yeah, not a name even people who are pretty well versed in NBA history, I would not expect Johnny Moore to be an immediate name that you would know. No. So, yeah. All right. So we're going to finish this up with a little, we're going to veer off course slightly, but want to talk about longest title droughts. The Nuggets, they've won their first championship after 55 years total as a franchise, 46 years in the NBA. So who we got next? So we're going to talk about the longest ones. We'll and both of us can predict who's going to be next. So we got the Kings, 1951, of course, not in their current city. They won it at Rochester. The Hawks, 1958, not in their current city. They won it in St. Louis. The Suns have existed since 1968, never won it.
They're next up, man. Yeah, they're the ones that you got to point to right now. It's like, all right, let's get going.
Probably. The Clippers, 1971, never won it. The Jazz, 1975, have never won it. The Pacers, 1973 was their last ABA title. They've never won an NBA title. The Nets, 1976 was their last ABA. They've never won in the NBA. The Blazers from 77, the Bullets Wizards franchise from 1978, the Sonics Thunder franchise, you know, 1979, the Thunder essentially have never won, you know, one since they moved in 2008. The 76ers, 1983.
That's a long time ago. Yeah. It is kind of funny how those 70s teams are just like, yeah, Blazers, Bullets, Sonics, 3 years in a row. Never been back, you know, never, you know, like none of those teams really had extensive runs. Obviously the Sonics make it in 1996 and the Thunder make it in the 2010s or whatever. Well, so it's like, Blazers, you know, it's 90, you know, it's 92. It's been a while for a lot of these teams and Bullets haven't really been in the mix at all in a long time. So Bullets, Wizards, whatever. So yeah, it's pretty. And then, yeah, that's Sixers. That's a long time ago now. Years, you know what I mean? 83. Years, yeah. It's like you wouldn't. Right. You're like, yeah, they're all right. But it's like, it's been a while.
That was 40 years. You know, well, I remember people in the 90s talking about the Cleveland curse, and that was like 30 years. It had only been 30 years, you know, and it's like, oh, wow. Of course, it took 50, but yeah. You got the Hornets, you know, 1989, they've never won one. Timberwolves, 1990, they've never won one. The Magic, 1990, they've also never won one. Obviously, been to a couple of finals. The Rockets, the 95, you know, that's almost, you know, 30 years ago now. The Grizzlies, 1996, never won one. The Bulls now, 1998.
I know
25 years.
It's feeling long in the tooth, man. I was very young when they last won a title, and now I'm
you're getting old. Yeah, the Pelicans, you know, never 2003, they never won, and the Pistons, 2004. That was 19 years.
Yeah, ago, man. Wow.
Which is that's longer than the difference between the Bad Boys and, you know, Big Ben, Rasheed Wallace, you know, Chauncey Billups championships. So, what do you think? Do you think like 20 years is when we start to consider it a draft? Do you think that's fair?
The NBA is tough. I would maybe go 25, 30 is when I start really bringing it up. 20 years is when you could start the conversation and be like, all right, you know, hey, it's been 20 years.
Been a while, yeah.
25-30 is like, all right, you guys might want to get going here. I mean, I think that's fair. I think that's fair to start saying like, yeah, what's going on? Like, yeah, it might be time to try to make this thing happen. But those are pretty shocking to me. I you know, the Suns, you know, all the way back to 1968. Now they become the most, you know, because the Kings effectively, like you said, they the franchise has won a title, but like nobody in Sacramento gives a shit that the Rochester Royals won the title in 1951 or whatever.
So you go to 85, you know, then that for them and the Hawks, you go to 68. I think they had 68 as well as the Suns. So
right.
Whatever point you want to pick. You know, obviously neither one has won in their franchise in their current city. Neither one has won in a very long time. So,
well, I don't know if you saw, but Trae Young tweeted out after the Nuggets won that we're next or our turn next or something like that with a ring emoji. And I was like,
nice. Hey, all right.
I'm not betting on it. Hey, you know what? You should that confidence. You should go into the season thinking that's the case. I will not be betting the Atlanta Hawks to win the NBA Finals next year, but he, as the lead player, should do that. So I appreciate him doing that. The Suns, you know, they felt like this was the year where they could maybe make a real run. Yeah. And obviously with Durant, that time is coming up for them. So you know, the Hawks, they got their lead, you know, their top players saying it's time.
Yeah, it's not impossible for the Hawks. I mean, they've got some pieces. Yeah.
All right.
okay. The Kings.
I was going to say, we're in one of the best Kings runs that we've ever, since 2002, which also is a long time ago now. It's like, you know, that is also 20 years ago. Like that they seem like they have the best potential chance. The Clippers, it felt like they were there, and now it doesn't feel like they're there again. So that clock, I think that clock's going to be ticking for a little while after that.
The Sixers, maybe the Sixers figure it out. I'm not giving up hope on the Sixers. You know, the Celtics now is 15 years since they won their last title. So I don't know how I feel about that.
That's true. Yeah.
So we're getting into drought territory for there. Now again, like, it's rained so much for the Celtics that
they're okay. 7 years. Those crops are still doing all right.
Drought. Yeah, right. Right. Exactly.
I don't need that much rain, but they're fine.
No, they don't. Yeah, they are.
The reservoir is full. They can take from the reservoir full. For a while.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bill Russell filled that thing up. Yes. For a century. So, So, you know, we'll see. You know, obviously, a lot of these teams kind of feel like they're far away, but you never know.
Yeah, those expansion, the expansion teams, aside from the Raptors, the Hornets, I mean, good God, they're nowhere close to doing it.
Right, yeah.
The Timberwolves, I mean,
I don't think so. Yeah.
The Magic, I'm not really betting on the Magic just yet. Their arrow is pointed up, but it needs to be a much bigger arrow than it is right now.
The Grizzlies,
they might not have their best player for a lot of the time.
Yeah,
so.
Depending on how that goes. Like if that weren't going on, I would feel better about that. But the Pelicans also have some very big weirdness with their best players. So
yes,
So
not a good time to be an expansion team of the last, 30 years because it's not doing too well. But we did that series probably a year or so ago about the expansion teams. And it was like the Heat were like pretty okay right out of the gates and have been pretty okay most of the time since then. It's like all these other, expansion teams have been scratching and clawing and climbing and trying to, cling to relevancy. And the Hornets did it for a while and then they've kind of fallen and it feels like it's been 20 years since they've been relevant. And the Timberwolves, struggled for a while and then got good for a little bit. And then they've been kind of struggling for relevance since then. And like the Heat were just like, we're okay. And then we're just fine the whole time. So it's just like, okay, that's cool. And then winning titles, making the finals, doing well. And then the Magic, obviously, the Shaq and Penny run, which is fantastic, but pretty much since then has been.
Yeah. And Dwight Howard. Right. But it's been a while since they've been anything close to relevant, but we'll see. All right. Well, this has been a fun one. We went a little long, but that's all right. I think, we got into a lot of interesting stuff.
Yeah. So, and they deserved it. The Nuggets deserved it. They were an organically built team.
The Nuggets absolutely deserved it.
Built through the draft.
Yeah. They were built morally correct. They are a morally correct team. They were built, not bought, which is obviously the morally correct way to build a team. So thank goodness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm so glad Stan Kroenke got a title.
Thank goodness that Stan Kroenke finally, impoverished, poor Stan Kroenke just wants to do things the right way.
It's been almost a couple of months since, his Rams won a title and his Avalanche won a title. Right, it's like, it's been almost 8 months since he had a sports championship. So it's good that it finally did finally come for him. And Popeye Jones got a ring too. Popeye Jones got a ring.
Popeye Jones got a ring. Yeah.
Former NBA player Ryan Bowen, I saw, got a ring.
Ryan Bowen got a ring.
Ryan
nice.
Bowen wow. got a ring. Calvin Booth, I guess, is the general manager or someone in the front office.
Right.
He got a ring
he's their,
too.
He's their new GM. Yeah. Right. He's their new. He's their recently new GM. They're a collection of wonderful
dudes. Yeah.
They are very much a we've got some guys team. you know, like in the best sense, you know. Yeah, Ryan Bowen is, oh yeah, that's right, we got Ryan Saunders, you know, you've got
Ryan Saunders is there. Yeah, Thomas Bryant got a ring. I saw a picture of him holding the trophy, and he's just like, all right,
Rick Adelman's son is one of the coaches too. They got a lot of coaches kids on the team, of course.
They have a lot of coaches. I looked at that team, they're like 27 coaches.
They got a lot of coaches. Yeah. Hey, hey, good, hey, you know what, whatever, it works out. Yeah, that is that was quite the team. So fun times. Well, hopefully everyone enjoyed the show. Thanks everyone so much for listening. You can find us out there on the social media at Over and Back NBA. You can find us on all the places where podcasts are played. If you want to leave a review and a rating, giving us nice compliments on how lovely we are, we would greatly appreciate that. It would help us make us feel good. We like to feel good. So it's about it. Rich, did I forget anything?
Nope. I think you got it. Over and Back NBA on all the relevant social medias, on YouTube, on Instagram, on Facebook, all that other good stuff. I guess Twitter, sort of, if you still want to use Twitter.
Twitter. You don't have to. All right. Exactly.
But,
all right.
Yeah, go to the much better Facebook. Oh, man. All right. So they're all bad, I guess.
All right.
It turns out they're all bad, but some are more bad than others. Yeah. But.
Give us, like, you know, mind vibes. You know, that'll work.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Find us on the street and tell us nice things. Let's bring it back to the old school. Yes.
Don't work too hard to find us on the street, because
if you walk by us, that's fine.
Yeah. It might be, if you happen to walk by us, then like say hi. But otherwise, don't like attempt to like search and find us and show up at our door, because that would be a little weird, you know.
Like Alonzo Mourning did to give me that cease and desist.
Right. Well, that is really, really weird. Yeah. So, but I mean, it's kind of an amazing experience for you.
It was fantastic. Yeah, I should have relished it a little bit more, but I just took the letter and then closed the door and
You know, the legal fees that you're going to get from that. notice, Pat, that I did not actually say the words. So
that's true.
Rich was the one who did it. So yeah, right. We're not incorporated. So
throw me under that bus. Yes, we are not incorporated. It was indeed me. So there you go.
Yeah. Okay. All right. It was you. You're the problem. So all right. Cool. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be back again soon.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.